Have you guys ever tried explaining football to a little kid? It's almost impossible to make it make sense. I've got two kids myself, and they're always like, Dad, what's this thing on TV for your work? When can we watch some Paw Patrol? Well, meet Future Fans, an innovative brand that helps little kids become big fans by embedding the rules of football into parallel games and activities. The way they teach is super unique and effective. As an example, they have this beanbag toss game with four tries to teach downs in football. I tried it with my kids. They love it. And later they connect those games back to the sport itself through a storybook. Seriously, check out the reviews on this thing. They have 4.9 stars on Amazon. Imagine your kid asking to watch on Sundays with you or being right there alongside you for all the ups and downs with your favorite team. That's what dreams are made of right there. And Future Fans exists to make that a reality. If you want your kid to understand football, Future Fans is for you. And it's only $49.99 right now. Use the code MMQB at futurefans.com to get 10% off and unlock a lifetime of memories starting now. That's $49.99. Use the code MMQB at futurefans.com.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Hello, and welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast. I'm Connor Rohr. Albert Breer's here. We'll get to the Titans hiring Brian Callahan and kind of firing that first shot in the coaching carousel. We're going to get through some of the games from this weekend. As you guys might have noticed, we're a day late. If you haven't seen the news, we're not running from it at this point. Albert and I's plan is to be here as long as we're able to be here. We consider ourselves very lucky to be able to have this forum to talk mm-hmm. with you guys. And thank you to everyone who has reached out. You know, we can say that we don't read things, and we can say that we don't look at things, but we see things. And of course, we saw the absolute worst of humanity in terms of comments about our situation here at SI. But we've also seen some things, you know, that have that have been really
touching.
It's
like anything else on social media, right? Like you get some people who are, I guess, dancing on a grave that hasn't been dug yet, and then you get other people who are very nice and human about it, and it's obviously was a tough weekend for everybody, but you do see the best in a lot of people going through something like that, you know. I guess it's like kind of hokey or whatever to say it, but you kind of get to see who has your back, which is good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. I didn't feel like doing this, and you know, and but I read, you know, we have a lot of crossover fans from the Around the NFL podcast, which I used to do at NFL Network. I was very lucky to be a guest, a recurring guest on that show, and you know, there was a Around the NFL fan who had said that how much he was going to miss the podcast, thought the podcast was going away. We don't know anything yet. So, but stuff like that really. You know, it's special. It means a lot, and it makes us want to come back. And so that's why we're here.
You'll see all the content you normally see from me and Connor until they tell us otherwise. How was that?
They're going to have to drag me out of this place.
Yeah.
Okay. What is Leonardo DiCaprio saying? Wolf of Wall Street. I'm not leaving. That's me. So let's get to Brian Callahan. First, salvo here. I should have something up on SI.com shortly, kind of breaking down what I saw as sort of the inside information here on the hire. So it was interesting, right? Brian Callahan had the Titans interview and second interview, and then was going to go to David Tepper, and then was going to go to Arthur Blank. And ensued that panic from the Titans that were like, we like this guy. He's not leaving. And, they got the deal done. And yeah. So it underscored, I think we were fading Brian Callahan a little bit. He didn't do a lot to pump up his own candidacy. And sometimes mm-hmm. we didn't realize maybe how hot he was going into the process, or maybe we downplayed it a little bit. I'll say that on my end. And B, it highlights the market, because people want play callers. The Titans had a play caller in their building and they did not want to let him go.
And I think first of all, that pipeline, if that's what you want, isn't exactly flush with names anymore. You know, it's Brian Callahan, it's Bobby Slowick, it's Ben Johnson, and then who? And Bobby wasn't even a play caller a year ago, right?
Yeah.
So, like, if that's what you want, if you want the young Shanahan, McVay, LaFleur, like, you want that guy, because so many of these guys have been tapped into over the last 3 or 4 years, that pipeline is not exactly flush with options. And so if there's going to be competition for somebody and you really like somebody, I can see where you would want to act quickly. I sort of view it, Connor, as like similar to the Bears bringing in Shane Waldron, right? Like, how many guys were out there available who had play calling experience in the Shanahan McVay system? Not many, right? That you could hire as a coordinator. And so the Bears knew, like, time was their friend here. And that, like, okay, like, the Raiders still getting their ducks in a row. The Patriots just had him in for a first interview, but they want to go through a process. And so you offer the guy a bird in the hand rather than two in the bush. And, like, in a lot of cases, guys will take that. And I think, like, that's sort of what you're looking at with, with a Brian Callahan, with a Shane Waldron on the coordinator side. It's if, like, hey, I know my job's not the most attractive one out there, I have to do something to game the market a little bit, to land a guy who might have more than one option. And I think both Waldron and Callahan by the end of the week may have had multiple options. But, you know, there's the Bears and the Titans sort of took matters into their own hands. And, you know, I think the aggression is why you're able to land somebody like that, which is why I don't mind. Look, like, if it's over and you really like the guy and you think that that's going to be it, like, fine, do it, you know?
I think that there were certainly, I think, some folks who went through that process and were like, yeah, I think they wanted Brian Callahan all along because, I think that my read on it was there were some people who walked in there and interviewed and were like, you don't want me for this job, you know, which happens,
right.
But there was definitely some infatuation here. And you brought up a good point about the Rams system. You have guys like Zach Robinson, who is interviewing for a few jobs. Maybe he gets Pittsburgh, for example. Maybe he gets New Orleans. You have guys like Jake Peets, who is rumored to be a candidate in New Orleans. You have Nick Caley, who I thought was maybe one of the smartest guys in the bunch there as their tight ends coach. You have a lot of offensive brain power there, and I think a lot of guys that could probably be offensive coordinators. I'm surprised that tree is not getting pumped harder, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and I think it's like, again, like, I think it's just, you know, you look at the names there and it's all those guys I feel like have their pluses. You know, Jake Peets has been a number of different places. Zach Robinson was a quarterback in the league and has come up coaching quarterbacks, which is always a check, you know, a box to check there. And then Nick Caley's got experience now both in the Patriots system and the and the Rams system. And he's coached tight ends, which means he's got experience in both the pass game and the run game. And so, you know, you can see all three of those guys as being viable options. And, you know, Waldron, of course, you know, was with Sean in Washington and was with Sean in Los Angeles. And so, you know, I just think, like, you look at, like, if you want that, you're going to have to move aggressively to go and get it. And I think that's why the Chicago OC search and the Tennessee head coach search goes that way too. I think anybody who's been around Callahan, like anybody who's been up close to him, like he screams head coach when you talk to him, you know?
Yeah.
Like he's like very, it's just, you know, like there are certain guys where you're like, yeah, I can picture that guy standing in front of the room. You know what I mean? Yeah, I can picture that guy, you know, giving a pregame speech or talking in front of the team about what they need to do on a Wednesday or getting you out of a bad situation that might happen during the week. Like all of that stuff. Like he's somebody who like just comes off as somebody who can handle all of that, you know?
Yeah.
Plus he's got the bloodline. So I know this like feels to a lot of people like, well, wait, where'd that come from? But I can tell you, he's like very, very well respected in the league. And, you know, his experience with Peyton Manning, obviously going back to Denver, he coached Matt Stafford also, you know, and then of course, like, you know, what he's done the last few years with Cincinnati, I think speaks for itself.
We'll move on here to the games in a second. My only other couple thoughts are, and this is getting, the coaching carousel is getting interesting because the blanks in Atlanta, they interviewed Bill Belichick already. They can hire him whenever they want. They wanted to talk to Callahan. So I wonder, you know, we had
I think that search is just like the Chargers search though, don't you?
Yes.
Right. Like, so like they have one guy that they're looking at hiring, and that one guy, I think they're working through what it needs to look like around that guy. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's money. Like, I don't think that's what it is. Like people have used the term leverage maybe, but I don't think leverage is about money in this case. I think leverage is about how the whole thing would be set up if that guy comes in. And so I almost feel like with both these searches, you have like two tracks, right? And like on one track, you've got this is what we're doing to try to hire Harbaugh in the Chargers case, Belichick in Atlanta's case. And then on this other track, it's like a contingency track. And I think they have to do it that way because of the way the calendar is set up, right? We're already 2 weeks past the end of the regular season. The Senior Bowl is next week. So you can't like – the way it used to be is like you might spend that first week trying to hire a Harbaugh or a Belichick, and then you just hit a hard reset after that first week if it doesn't work. Can you do that anymore with the way the calendar's set up? You probably can't, right? So like now I think you have to be a little bit more willing to multitask that way. So I think for – in the case of Belichick and Harbaugh – I think both of those now come down to not money again. I think it's how those organizations are going to be set up around the head coach. In other words, what's Rich McKay's role in Bill Belichick's Atlanta? I think that's a big one, right? Does Terry Fontenot stay? Are you willing to set up your personnel department in a way that works for Belichick? How much say is Belichick going to have in the draft and free agency? How's the reporting structure going to work? And then in the case of Harbaugh had issues with ownership in San Francisco. So ownership is involved in football in LA. So what's John Spanos' role within Harbaugh's Los Angeles, right? Like, are the Chargers willing to spend? I think they're willing to spend on Harbaugh. Are you willing to spend $4 million to bring in Jesse Minter as your defensive coordinator to get him to come from Michigan with Harbaugh? And then on the personnel side, are you willing to hire Harbaugh's GM? I think they are willing to do that because they've interviewed four guys who have direct connections to Harbaugh and Ed Dodds, Brandon Brown, Ian Cunningham, and Joe Ortiz. But these are all questions I think that have to be answered. And I think that's what's taking so long is like, is this thing going to be structured in a way that's going to make the head coach comfortable enough to make that leap?
So here's how I see it right now. Mm-hmm. I think that let me pull up my little cheat sheet here.
You got like a chart or something there?
I do. Okay, so I think Tennessee's done. I think that Seattle is some kind of a mix of Dan Quinn, maybe Mike McDonald, maybe Mike Vrabel. But I still think that, I don't know. There have been so many people during this process that have been like, they need an offensive play caller. They need a really good offensive play caller. Seattle. Yeah, you're in a division with Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay, you know?
Yeah.
Could something change there? I don't know. I'm so in Washington.
So I just think I would keep an eye on Vrabel there too if it's not Quinn. I think we all assume Quinn is like, if Quinn can present something to them that's like, here's my plan on offense, here's the way it would work that they like, I think it probably is Quinn. But certainly I think that whole thing with, you know, like, do we want a fresh start? Do we want Carroll 2.0 or do we want to do something different? I think Vrabel would be somebody who would kind of give them a chance to do something a little different.
Yeah. I think that in Washington, I mean, I had thought all along Ben Johnson for that job. However, I think Mike McDonald is gaining a lot of steam. I think Raheem Morris has done a nice job interviewing. I think, you know, I heard someone say the other day he's got a pretty solid shot at getting one of these jobs. Yeah. So I don't know where Raheem fits in here. Atlanta, I still think it could be Belichick. In LA, I still think it's going to be Harbaugh. But Harbaugh takes that Michigan job, and all of a sudden, like, boom! Now you're looking around and being like, okay, that's a chaos scenario. That is like, okay. Then we start getting into Frank Smith a little bit more. Then we start getting into Dave Canales a little bit more. Then we start getting into Bobby Slowick a little bit more. And so you're going to be a lot of these teams that are hiring first year play callers as head coaches in this cycle. Could be. So
doesn't it feel like Belichick and Harbaugh are sort of holding the whole thing up?
And they love it. Right? Like, why wouldn't you? Because there's a complete and total advantage to doing that, right? You are making sure you are basically stopping up the dam and you're waiting for every single piece of information. I mean, neither of these guys are desperate. Jim Harbaugh is going to walk away from a $12.5 million deal that's going to take him into like his late 60s. So he'll be all right, you know? It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to this. It's been a throwback coaching carousel. But now that first domino falls, I think we're going to start seeing a lot. Although there's a lot of good candidates that are still playing. Ben Johnson's
still playing.
It's
going to be weird if like the... if this spills into next week, because next week's Senior Bowl week. And for those who don't know, that's like a job fair for coaches.
Sure.
To the point where like some head coaches who go don't leave their hotel room because they don't want to be harassed all week.
Yes.
So like, I think next week could be really interesting if there's still a lot of questions that need to be answered, because generally what you see there is, okay, like there's like a stray position coach job open here or whatever. And so like, you know, there are coaches there that are just like looking for a landing spot. If you have like a bunch of coordinator jobs still open and some head coach jobs still open, it could be pretty chaotic there next week.
Let's go back to Saturday. Ravens, Texans, 34-10. It's a Ravens 49ers AFC title game. It's what we thought. But Baltimore, this game was tight. It was 10-10 at the half, and then Baltimore kind of started to pull away. Mike McDonald, man, I'm telling you, I mean, has been one of the very few people who have made CJ Stroud look like a rookie. There's been very few times this year where he has dropped back and not known exactly what he wants to do with the football.
I've seen him do that before too, unfortunately.
At Michigan? Maybe.
Yeah,
that helps. Having that background and knowledge helps for sure. I don't know. You know, I'm going to be careful, because last year when we had Jacksonville, we're all sitting there and saying, okay, next year Jacksonville's in the title game. This is their kind of like I'm arriving year. We're all saying that about the Texans right now. I don't know. I mean, Bobby Slowick goes, and we don't know what CJ Stroud looks like. I think from that aspect, I'm preaching a little bit of patience. From Baltimore's perspective, it was funny. I went back and looked at in 2018, I want to say like right before Thanksgiving, the reported intelligence in the NFL was that John Harbaugh and the Ravens are going to walk away from one another, almost like Tomlin in the Steelers this year. It was very similar, the vibes. My God, how funny that looks in hindsight. That, like, that coaching class, could you have imagined John Harbaugh interviewing up against Cliff Kingsbury, Freddie Kitchens, Adam Gase, you know, like in hindsight, you know, like how crazy that would have been, you know?
Well, just, I think it sort of illustrates too, like how hard it is to find a guy like that. You know what I mean? Like how it's really freaking hard to identify a guy like that. Now it's much easier, like it's much easier to find Jim Harbaugh or Bill Belichick. Like now we know what they are, but to hire that guy off of like, you know, like he's just been an assistant is very difficult. And, you know, I do think like it should be instructive to teams in that, like, if you've got a good thing going, it's like sort of where like the Bills are right now. We're going to get to them, but it's like where they are with Sean McDermott. It's like, do you need a fresh start? Well, like, be careful. You know what I mean? Like, be careful about that because you've made the playoffs now, what, six of 7 years that he's been there. And you hadn't made the playoffs in 18 years before that. And so, like, I do think that it can be instructive in that, like, you can have a coach who's been in a place for a long time where it seems like maybe he's getting stale and maybe he just needs to be pushed to do things a little differently and to refresh. Because all the things that you hired him for, he can still do well, but maybe it's you need to change some things around him. And, you know, sure enough, you look at it like, you know, when they put Wink in as the defensive coordinator, that gave them a jolt. And Greg Roman as offensive coordinator, that gave them a jolt. And then a few years later, they turned those two spots over again. And now Todd Monken and Mike McDonald have done the same. And you still have the John Harbaugh that won a Super Bowl. What was it now? 11 years ago, right? Like, you still have a lot of the qualities that he brought to the table then, with just sort of a refreshed approach to a lot of other things. So, yeah, I don't think there's any question. And look, like, that team, too. I mean, I've always thought this was what's most impressive about the Ravens is the players, like, you could identify Roquan Smith and Patrick Queen and Kyle Hamilton and, like, all the guys they have. Like, it's almost like you could, like, close your eyes and visualize Ray Lewis and Ed Reed. It's, like, it's so impressive the way that they built in that, like, there is a real mold for a player there that may evolve some over time, but still has a foundation. And they, even like going back to like when Brian Billick was the head coach and Ozzie Newsome was a young GM, it sort of still looks the same. And that's what really struck me on Saturday night, you know, is that, or on Saturday afternoon, is that like what the Ravens are and what they have been has evolved, but it hasn't really changed.
I really loved Baltimore's approach. It's, you know, Monken is so funny. I mean, you know, he just seems to just understand Lamar as a quarterback better than anybody has since Lamar was in, since Lamar was at Louisville. And just early on, getting him involved in the passing game, understanding that they had some time off and making him just immediately a massive part of that game plan, getting him in rhythm. I mean, this is the team that I think is most closely aligned to what Lamar wants to be. And that's why we don't know how far they can go.
Right.
You know, I'm so happy they're playing the 49ers again. This is going to be, and well, not yet, but you know, I think they will.
Well, but that was like, wasn't that our takeaway from like, I think we talked about this last week. That was sort of my takeaway from Wild Card weekend was like, the 49ers and Ravens are better than all these teams.
They're just better. Like
I just felt that way coming out of Wild Card weekend. Like, people asked me what I thought. I'm like, the two teams that didn't play this weekend are better than the teams that did, you know? Like, it feels like that's just sort of the way it is, you know?
Yeah. No offense to anybody else, you know, but, you know, you and I will be in Baltimore this weekend, so it'll be a fun chance to get to see everything close up. We'll see them take on the Chiefs. I've already seen a lot of conspiracy theories about referees and Taylor Swift, and oh boy, I'm loving it. So that'll be a lot of fun. We'll burn through the rest of these pretty quickly, but 49ers and Packers, a couple things here. Just a hell of a game from Green Bay. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe how well they played.
So are we going to do the Houston thing for them? I kind of feel like we should, right? Like, same thing. Like,
yeah, I mean,
constantly, cautiously have to feel really good about where they are, right?
Get yourself a new defensive coordinator and we'll talk, you know?
I mean, you have to cautiously feel very good about the young talent they've got in the roster, the way the quarterback finished the year. Like, I think that there's a lot of, like, things to like about where they are, right?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Jordan Love looked excellent. And, okay, he threw a crossbody rollout interception, you know, in the... you know, at the end of the game, which you can't do, but okay, he's in that, he's had that experience. Now he's got the Rolodex, you know, and we'll see what happens, you know?
Can I tell you what I liked about it from San Francisco's perspective, though, was that that was not their A game. And we've seen the Niners in the past not react very well to not having their A game. And we've seen the Niners get in tough spots where they just seem a little out of sorts. It's like if you can knock them off schedule and like they can get a little off kilter. And I think their ability to kind of ride things out was my biggest takeaway from that game in general. It's the coming from behind thing, which, you know, like whatever the record was, 0-30, if they're down by 7+ going into the fourth quarter, fine. Yeah, they did that. So now they're 1-30. But I think more than just that, it was like the adverse conditions. The fact that maybe they didn't have their A game, the fact that Debo went down early in that game, and the Packers were running on them. You know, like the fact that they had to kind of gather themselves in the middle of that game. I mean, look, like if they win the whole thing, it's only two games left. So, you know, it's a little late in the game to be learning lessons and everything else. But I do think it was good to see from them where when you got them having to sort of play left-handed a little bit, and saw them having, you know, something less than their very best, they were able to cut it out.
I think that Kyle Shanahan now goes into, and not that he didn't know this before, but I think he goes into the latter stages of the playoffs now completely eyes wide open, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that Brock Purdy's Jimmy Garoppolo, but we saw Jimmy Garoppolo melt down in the Super Bowl. He did. He missed throws.
Yeah.
He panicked. And so, which I would have done too. I'm not, you know, I'm not saying I would have walked into the Super Bowl and been Joe Cool. This happens to everybody. But I think I will be interested to see how he develops a game plan moving forward with that in mind. I mean, you know, in Philly last year, I remember being at that game. I remember wanting to pay attention to how he treated Brock Purdy, and it was instructive. And I'm curious if against Detroit, we see a concerted effort to just blow him full of hot air, get him as confident as humanly possible so that down the stretch, if you have this gotta have it situation, you don't miss on it, you know?
What did you think about that, like the trick he had of like after the snap wiping his hand off?
I like that.
Yeah. I do think, but I think that, like what I said about the Niners applies to Purdy too, don't you? Like, don't you feel better about him? Like, at least handling situations like that, and that he was able to like get the Niners down the field, make the throw to like Ayuk, you know, over the middle to move the chains and kind of, I guess, compartmentalize some of the ups and downs that he went through earlier in the game and get them in the end zone at the end. Like, I think that counts for a lot.
Wiping your hands, by the way, in the middle of a dropback is like, It's like the new fiddling with your mouthpiece in the middle of a play, you know?
Yeah.
It's very...
I was impressed.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
Like you...
I think that takes a certain amount of composure, don't you?
You're holding the ball with the left hand. Isn't that scary?
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to do that. Over in the NFC, gosh, I really wanted the Bucs to make this a chaos scenario. I like the Lions... I think that they are America's team at this point, but Tampa Bay was feisty, and I don't know what they're going to do this offseason. If Dave Canales goes and gets a head coaching job, I think that might complicate how you view Todd Bowles, maybe, and whether that job becomes open. I mean, Mike Evans is gone. Levante David is gone. They have a lot of impending free agents, but... Could you run it back at this point with Baker Mayfield, and how would you feel about that if you did?
I think you sort of like have to. I mean, I don't know.
Kind of have to, right?
Like swing it, you know? Like, yeah, because, I mean, very clearly, like, the locker room believes in him, and he was a great fit for what they were as a team. And so, like, I think you definitely have to put your best foot forward in trying to re-sign him. Now, are there limits? Sure. But if you're Baker, like, you see what, like, Derek Carr got last offseason, you see what Jimmy Garoppolo got last offseason, you see what Daniel Jones got last offseason, you wouldn't be doing yourself a service to not shoot for something like that. And then the question becomes, is the market there for that, right? And, like, if you're the Bucs, do you look at that and say, yeah, we should put the franchise tag on him? And I can't, I don't know where that tag's going to land, but it'll probably be, what, 25? You know, somewhere between 25 and 30, probably. I can't even remember what last year's tag was, to be honest with you. But yeah. But I think, but I mean, if you look at it, like, would it be worth that to you? Because I think that's the question. It's not do you want him back. It's like, how much are you willing to pay to get him back? And, like, are you worried enough about losing him where you throw the tag on him so a team like Vegas or Atlanta or New England can't get their hands on him? Like, you know, Atlanta, for example, Belichick really liked Mayfield coming out in 18. Wouldn't Baker be a good fit for Atlanta, you know? Plus, you kicked the leg out from underneath a division rival. I think it would make some sense. So, like, is that part of it, like, where it's like, yeah, we fear losing him enough where we want to put the tag on him?
You know who I heard loved, and I think at one point tried to trade up or had discussed trading up for Baker Mayfield was Bill Belichick.
Okay, so the franchise tag number, by the way, I way underestimated it because I'm a moron. 35.9 is what over the cap has it.
Wasn't there something about Belichick inquiring about a quarterback in that draft? Don't you remember that there was like a there was some sort of weird story about that?
It was Baker. Like they had I want to say Josh like flew to Oklahoma to work him out like the week of the draft.
That's what it was. So
it was definitely something. Like they had a real interest in him. They liked him. Like that's why, again, like if Josh winds up with Bill, right, like in Atlanta, say, you certainly see that, you know? And the franchise tag number is so high at quarterback where it's like then it'd be tough to do a long-term deal for less than like $40 million a year, right? Yeah. Because it wouldn't be worth it to him. So, yeah, the Bucks are in a tricky spot. Like, do you let him go to the market, let the market decide, knowing you could lose him, knowing you could piss him off? If you do let him go to the market, do you pay him ahead of time? Do you tag him? Like, this is a pretty complicated decision for Tampa.
The Lions looked like the Lions. They looked, you know, at this point, I think that, I don't know. I can't with any degree of confidence say that they're going to beat the 49ers, but if the 49ers play the way that they did last week, the Lions would beat them by 14 points. But I don't think that the 49ers are going to play the way that they did last week.
Right.
I think they're going to come out. I think they're going
to
come out.
The 49ers, to be fair, have been off, what, they clinched the one seed in week 17. So they have basically been coming off 3 weeks off in a rainstorm against a hot, young Packers team. Like the circumstances are much different this week.
Let's get to the last one quick. Chiefs and Bills, 27-24. Mm-hmm. Everyone's talking about the missed kick in a dang lake effect hellhole. How about Josh Allen missing that throw a couple plays beforehand? I mean, that to me was the story. And I love afterwards, there's all this saber rattling and, you know, whatever. You can, you know, I don't really care. I'm not invested in whether they keep, you know, Sean McDermott or not. Doesn't matter to me. But I thought he played, you know, that defense was crushed by injury. They had a game plan where they kept the ball out of the Chiefs' hands. They were aggressive. They played smart situational football. They punched out that would-be touchdown at the goal line, which is my favorite rule in the NFL. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. Every time you fumble through the goal line, you should get penalized. You should lose 10 points for doing it. What else did you want Sean McDermott to do? I mean, Josh Allen missed that throw at the end of the game. I mean,
here's my question, though. God, I'm gonna feel terrible if like you're too young for this comparison. Do the Bills feel a little like the Tony Dungy Bucks to you?
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where they were knocking on the door, knocking on the door, knocking on the door, and it was just not there. And then they went and they initially, for people who are my age or remember, they initially went after Bill Parcells. Yeah. And that didn't wind up working out. And then they wind up with John Gruden. They win the Super Bowl the next year. But that was like a Bucs roster that was starting to age, that had like sort of, it felt like it kept hitting a ceiling and needed something. And like, I sort of, you know, obviously there are a lot of differences. That team was driven by defense. This team is driven by a great quarterback. Does it feel like this team needs that sort of spark, you know? And has it gotten to the point where you're with that group of players, and it's not like the window's going to be open as long as Josh Allen's there. But if you like start to look at the guys who are part of this build the last 7 years, Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer, Tre'Davious White, Matt Milano, Deion Dawkins, Stephon Diggs, like a lot of those guys are over 30 now.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, do you want to push all your chips into the table again in 2024? Do you want to do that with the same staff? Do you want to hit reset a little bit and start to work some of those guys off the roster? And if you do that, is Sean McDermott the guy that you want building the next iteration of it for Josh Allen? Like, these are big picture questions, you know? And I think because of the age, again, of some of the important players in the roster, and their window is open as long as Josh Allen is there, in my opinion. But like the rest of the roster, like the guys around Josh Allen, they are getting older. Like, they've got a tough decision to make on Stephon Diggs. That's one thing. Like, I haven't heard a lot of people talk about this. Like, do we think Diggs is the same guy anymore?
Yeah.
Like, I think Diggs is sort of like Kelce now, right? Like, where Travis Kelce, like, he's still serviceable. Like, he's still a good player. But can Kelce be the number one for you anymore in Kansas City? Probably not, right? Like, which I think what we've seen, like, what we've seen kind of unfold over the last few months. Like, is it the same thing with Diggs in Buffalo?
It's, I'm very curious to see what happens there. That is a team that has tried so hard. They're like the family in your neighborhood that's up to their eyeballs in crippling debt, but just pretends that nothing's happening. You know, they're just like, oh, we love it. We love each other. I think something.
But I will say, like, the team did show like a spark when the whole Sean McDermott 9/11 thing happened. You know?
Yeah.
Like, because, I mean, they this was their first loss since then. So I do think, like, you see, like, the program's not broken. It's just, do you need something to put it over the top? And again, like, those Tony Dungy Bucks, if you want to look at the history of it, it's really interesting. They went all in on that group, the Sapp and Brooks and Lynch group, right? By going and getting John Gruden, and like, we're all in for right now. And then they won the Super Bowl and it completely collapsed after that. And they didn't win again for 15 years, you know? Yeah. So
go trade for, I mean, well, you can't get a, I think Jim Harbaugh is about to go be the coach of the Chargers, by the way.
I think so too. I think we're moving in that direction.
Well, thanks as always for Albert.
I won't sing the fight song or anything like that. By the way, just let's give some credit to the Chiefs too. Six straight AFC championship games. Unbelievable. And being able to do it again while remaking your roster. That defense does not get enough credit. Like, they do not get enough credit for like the job that they did at the end of that game. I would argue that the throw that everybody points out, Connor, that throw to Shakir that Allen missed, that's because of Chris Jones. That's because Chris Jones walks Deion Dawkins back into Josh Allen.
Tony Romo said that Chris Jones hit him, and Tony Romo was incorrect. But you're right. But he was in his space. He got in his space. He affected the throw.
He affected the throw.
I will give you that.
And this is really interesting, too. Like, one last note on that. I talked to Chris Jones after the game about it, and he said, like, so they lined him up on the edge in that play, and he had been talking with the coaches through the game. And he basically said, like, they wanted to put him on the edge earlier. And he basically said, like, let's save that.
Yeah.
Because if we do it now, then they'll be able to adjust to it. So let's save that.
Smart.
And sure enough, at the end of the game, they were able to get him singled up on Deion Dawkins. No adjustment. And Deion Dawkins gets walked back into Josh Allen. Josh Allen misses the throw. Third and 9 out of bounds. Tyler Bass misses the field goal, which, poor Buffalo, wide right again. Two plays after that and the game's over. But six straight AFC championships, that's pretty unbelievable. And Andy Reid, six with Kansas City and five with Philly, which is an amazing, amazing, amazing accomplishment.
It is. We're going to be there to see them together.
We are.
In Baltimore this weekend. Albert is taking me to Phillips seafood. Just kidding. I don't think
Saturday night.
I don't think the Big Phillips is there anymore.
You coming in Saturday night?
No, absolutely not. I can. It's like a 2.5 hour drive for me. I'm gonna be home in my own bed after that game. So I'm very excited. But so I'll see you there. Let me get some crab cakes or something. In the meantime, like we said at the top of the show, thank you guys for sticking with us. We're going to be here. Matt and Gilberto are going to be here next week. We're going to be here to talk about the conference championships. We're going to be in Las Vegas for the Super Bowl. So stick with us, and we'll keep sticking with you guys.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.